Welcome to your GCSE English Language Revision Podcast. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most fascinating and genuinely useful topics in the entire specification, language and power. This is component 3 of your English language course, and it's all about how language works in the real world, how it reflects power, how it shapes identity, how it has changed over centuries, and most importantly, how you can write about it in a way that earns top marks. So settle in, grab a pen if you want to jot things down, and let's get started. Section 1. What is language and power, and why does it matter? Language is never neutral. Every word choice, every sentence structure, every text type carries with it a set of assumptions, values, and power relationships. That's the big idea at the heart of this component. Think about it this way. When a doctor says, "We're going to run a few tests," who is in control of that situation? The doctor uses the word "we" to soften the power dynamic, but it's still the doctor making the decision. That's instrumental power, using language to get things done, to direct, to control. Or think about a politician giving a speech. They might use inclusive language like "our nation" and "together we will." That's synthetic personalisation. They're creating the illusion of a personal relationship with millions of people at once. These are the kinds of observations that examiners are looking for. Not just the writer uses emotive language, but why and what effect it has on the power relationship between writer and reader, speaker and listener. Now, this component asks you to look at language variation across time, from around 1550 to the present day. That's nearly 500 years of English language change. And the key question is always, what forces drove those changes, and how do they reflect shifts in social and cultural power? Section 2, the language frameworks. Your analytical toolkit. To analyse any text, whether it's from 1611 or 2024, you need to apply the language frameworks. Think of these as your 6 analytical lenses, and I want you to remember them with this mnemonic: GPMSLD. G is for graphology. That's the visual and layout features of a text. Font choices, headings, columns, images, spacing. Even in a historical text, the way it's laid out on the page tells you something about its purpose and audience. P is for phonology. That's the sound patterns of language. Alliteration, assonance, rhyme, rhythm, onomatopoeia. In spoken data, you'd also look at features like intonation, stress, and accent. M is for morphology. That's the structure of words themselves. Prefixes, suffixes, root words. For example, the word undemocratic. The prefix un negates, demo comes from Greek meaning people, kratic relates to power or rule. Even word structure carries meaning. S is for syntax, that's sentence structure. Are sentences long and complex, or short and punchy? Is the syntax formal and elaborate, like in a Victorian legal document, or fragmented and informal, like in a text message? L is for lexis and semantics. This is word choice and meaning. It's probably the framework you'll use most often. Think about connotations, semantic fields, register, formal versus informal vocabulary. A historical text might use archaic lexis, words that have fallen out of use, and that itself is significant. And D is for discourse. That's the overall structure and organisation of a text. How does it open? How does it develop? What cohesive devices does it use? Connectives, pronouns, repetition, to hold it together. So your mnemonic is GPMSLD. Graphology, phonology, morphology, syntax, lexis and semantics, discourse. Now, in your exam, you won't be expected to use all 6 frameworks on every text, but you should aim to use at least 3 or 4, and always choose the ones most relevant to the data in front of you. Section 3, language change over time. One of the most important aspects of this component is understanding how English has changed since around 1550. Let me walk you through the key periods and the forces that drove change. Early modern English, from roughly 1550 to 1700, was a period of enormous change. The printing press transformed literacy and language. Spelling began to standardise.
With V pointing, the same word could be spelled dozens of different ways. The King James Bible of 1611 had a massive influence on English vocabulary and style, introducing phrases we still use today. Late modern English, from 1700 to 1900, saw the codification of grammar. Samuel Johnson published his famous dictionary in 1755. Grammarians like Robert Loth in 1762 wrote prescriptive grammar rules, rules about what was correct English. This is where attitudes to language really become interesting, because these rules were often based on Latin grammar and didn't always reflect how English actually worked. The Industrial Revolution from the 1800s onwards brought a huge expansion of vocabulary. New inventions needed new words. Science, industry, and trade all contributed thousands of new terms. And as mass literacy grew, particularly after the Education Act of 1870, newspapers and print media spread a more standardized form of English across the country.
The 20th century brought radio and television, which had a profound effect on spoken English. Received pronunciation, the accent associated with the BBC and the educated elite, became a model of correct speech. But over the decades, regional accents became more accepted, and attitudes to language diversity began to shift. And then came the internet and social media. This is where language change has accelerated dramatically. New words enter the language constantly. Spelling conventions are relaxed in informal digital communication. Emoji and abbreviations create new modes of expression. The distinction between spoken and written language has blurred in ways that would have been unimaginable to a Victorian grammarian. Section 4. Mode, field, function, and audience. These four contextual factors are absolutely central to your analysis, and examiners will be looking for you to apply them consistently. Mode refers to whether a text is written, spoken, or multimodal, a combination of both. A tweet is written, but often has features of spoken language. A formal speech is spoken, but may have been carefully scripted. Understanding mode helps you explain why certain language features appear. Field refers to the subject matter or topic of a text. A medical text will use technical, field-specific vocabulary. A sports commentary will use its own specialist lexis. Field affects register, the level of formality and the vocabulary choices a writer or speaker makes. Function refers to what the text is trying to do. Is it informing, persuading, entertaining, instructing? A text can have multiple functions, and identifying the primary function helps you understand the language choices. Audience refers to who the text is aimed at. A text aimed at experts will use different language from one aimed at the general public. And crucially, the relationship between writer and audience often reflects a power dynamic. Who is assumed to have knowledge? Who is being positioned as needing information? Section 5. Exam tips and common mistakes. Right, let's talk about how to actually get the marks. Because knowing the content is only half the battle, you also need to know how to write about it effectively. The most common mistake I see is what examiners call feature spotting. That's when a candidate identifies a language feature, say the writer uses alliteration, and then stops there. That will get you into level 1 or level 2 at best. To reach level 3 and level 4, you need to explain the effect of that feature, connect it to the context, and evaluate the significance of the language choice. Here's a simple formula to remember: IAEC. Identify the feature, analyze the effect, evaluate the significance, connect to context. So instead of "the writer uses alliteration," you might say "the alliterative phrase powerful, persistent, and proud creates a rhythmic, emphatic quality that reinforces the speaker's authority and projects confidence to the audience." In the context of a political speech aimed at rallying support, this phonological patterning functions to persuade as much as to inform. That's the difference between level 2 and level 4. And it's not about writing more, it's about writing more precisely and analytically. Another common mistake is failing to evaluate attitudes to language. This component specifically asks you to think critically about how people have viewed language as something to be corrected, standardized, preserved, or celebrated in its diversity. Prescriptivism is the view that there is a correct form of language, and that deviations from it are errors. Descriptivism is the view that all language varieties are equally valid, and that linguists should describe language as it is, not prescribe how it should be.
Examiners want to see you engaging with these debates. Don't just describe what a text does. Evaluate the assumptions about language and power that underlie it.
Section 6. Quickfire Recall Quiz. Right, let's test what you've learned. I'll ask a question, give you a moment to think, and then give you the answer. Ready? Question 1. What does the mnemonic GPMSLD stand for? Graphology, phonology, morphology, syntax, lexis and semantics, discourse. Question 2. What is the difference between prescriptivism and descriptivism? Prescriptivism says there is a correct form of language and deviations are errors. Descriptivism says all language varieties are equally valid. Question 3. What are the 4 contextual factors you should consider when analysing any text? Mode, field, function, and audience. Question 4. What does the formula IAEC stand for? Identify, analyse, evaluate, connect to context. Question 5. Name 2 forces that drove language change in the 19th century. The Industrial Revolution, which created new vocabulary, and the expansion of mass literacy following the Education Act of 1870. Section 7. Summary and sign-off. Let's bring it all together. Language and power is about understanding that language is never neutral. It always reflects and reinforces social relationships, cultural values, and historical contexts. Your job in the exam is to apply the 6 language frameworks, GPMSLD, to analyse texts from different time periods and modes. You need to consider how mode, field, function, and audience shape language choices. You need to evaluate attitudes to language, prescriptive versus descriptive. And you need to synthesise your knowledge across different areas of study, making connections between historical change and contemporary language use. Remember, examiners are not just looking for what you know, they're looking for how you think. Show them that you can think like a linguist. Be precise with your terminology, be analytical, not just descriptive, and always, always connect your observations to the bigger picture of language and power. You've got this. Keep revising, keep practicing, and remember, every text you encounter is an opportunity to practice these skills. From a cereal box to a Shakespeare sonnet, language is everywhere, and now you have the tools to analyse it. Good luck in your exam. I'll be rooting for you. Take care and keep going.